Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we cut through the noise to get to what really matters.
And today, we're doing a deep dive into the 2025 Ransomware Defense Playbook.
Yeah, we are really cracking open the strategies for what has become, I mean, you could argue the biggest threat facing growing businesses right now, these sophisticated rapid-fire ransomware attacks.
And we should be clear, we're not talking about the old lock your files and ask for Bitcoin attacks anymore.
Yeah.
It's a whole new ballgame.
It really is. So our mission today is to give you a shortcut. We've distilled the critical steps, the tech, the planning you need to do right now.
And the sources we're looking at are really specific about who this hits hardest.
Right. They zero in on companies with, what, about 50 to 250 employees?
Exactly. And that segment is so important to understand.
Why that group specifically?
Well, the thinking is that these businesses are, you know, they're big enough to be lucrative. They can pay significant ransoms, sometimes six figures. But they often lack the budget or the dedicated security team that a huge enterprise company has. So they're basically the perfect target.
The perfect intersection of high value and, let's say, lower defenses.
That's it. It's where these cybercrime groups are focusing all their energy.
So this isn't just about, you know, best practices anymore. The research is pretty stark. It's saying this kind of defense is essential for survival. It's not just a recommendation.
Oh, absolutely. The financial cost alone can be devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, we see ransom demands hitting six figures, but that's just the start.
Right. That's not the real cost.
Not even close. You have to factor in the downtime, the regulatory fines if data gets out, legal fees. The average recovery cost can easily top $250,000.
Wow.
So if we can help you avoid that, this whole conversation is more than worth it.
And here's the thing. The piece that really changes the game in 2025 that you have to grasp right away, it's this tactic they call double extortion.
It completely changes the risk calculation. It's not just about getting your files back anymore.
So what is it? How does it work?
Okay, so the attackers, they no longer just encrypt your files and wait for payment. Before they do anything, they first exfiltrate your data.
Meaning they steal it.
They systematically steal it. Your customer lists, your HR records, financials, everything sensitive. Then they encrypt your systems and make their demand.
So the leverage is?
The leverage is, if you refuse to pay, maybe you say, hey, I have great backups, they still win. They threaten to publish all that stolen confidential data on the dark web.
Oh, that's brutal. So even if you recover, you're still facing a massive data breach.
Exactly. You get hit with the fines, the reputation damage.
Yeah.
You're extorted twice.
Okay, so the first step in defending against this has to be understanding their whole approach, right? This multi-stage attack.
Right.
The sources say they spend days, sometimes weeks, inside a network before anyone knows they're there. Why wait?
It seems a little weird, doesn't it? You'd think they'd strike right away.
Yeah, get in, get paid, get out.
But they're not looking for a quick smash and grab. They're playing the long game to ensure maximum damage, which maximizes the chance you'll pay.
So how are they getting in? What are the main entry points we're seeing?
Well, the initial access vectors are depressingly familiar because they still work.
Phishing emails, I assume?
Phishing is still number one.
Mm.
Malicious attachments, that kind of thing. But also compromised credentials bought on the dark web, unpatched software, and even just abusing legitimate remote access tools.
And once they're in, that's the reconnaissance phase.
That's it. They're moving quietly. They're mapping your entire infrastructure, looking for the crown jewels.
The critical databases, the financial servers.
And most importantly, your backup systems. They know if they can take out your backups, you're cornered.
Of course.
And at the same time, they're escalating privileges, trying to get from a normal user account to a full-blown administrator. They're usually targeting the domain controllers to get that level of access.
And from there, they start moving laterally. What's interesting is how they build in that persistence.
Oh, yeah. They don't rely on just one way in. Once they have admin rights, they spread out, compromising more systems and creating multiple backdoors.
So even if you find one and clean it up,
they could hop right back in through another.
Yeah.
Sometimes they use tools that are already on your network. We call it living off the land. So it's much harder to spot.
And the timing of the final attack, the encryption, that's also deliberate.
Highly deliberate. It's often time for a weekend or holiday.
When IT is at a minimum.
Exactly. When the response will be slower, it gives them hours of unchecked time to make sure the damage is widespread. It's calculated. It's strategic.
Which makes the defense challenge so clear. You can't just have one wall. You need layers that can stop them at each of those stages.
Right.
So if a single technology isn't enough, what does a modern defense stack look like for 2025? The sources are pretty clear we need to move past traditional antivirus.
That's mandatory at this point. Traditional AV just looks for known bad files, you know, signatures.
A blacklist.
A blacklist, yeah. But modern attackers use fileless malware, sophisticated scripts that are always changing. So that's where something called EDR comes in.
Endpoint detection and response.
Right. And the difference is, EDR doesn't look for what's known to be bad. It looks for suspicious behavior.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. So is a normal Word document suddenly trying to run complex commands? Is a script trying to connect to a server in a country you don't do business with?
I see.
When EDR spots that, it doesn't just block it. It can automatically isolate that machine from the rest of the network in seconds.
Which stops that lateral movement you were talking about?
That took it cold.
Okay, so EDR sounds like a must-have.
Yeah.
You also mentioned another layer, Security Operations Center or SOC monitoring. For a small business owner worried about cost, which one is more important?
That's the key question, isn't it? Where do you put your money? I'd say EDR is the foundation. It's the automated guard. But SOC, that's the human intelligence layer on top. See, an EDR can generate a lot of alerts, maybe too many, for a small IT team to really investigate.
So it's about connecting the dots.
It's a team of human experts, 24/7, correlating all those alerts and spotting the really subtle attacks, the living off the land stuff that an automated system might miss. For most small businesses, outsourcing that is really the only way to get that kind of vigilance.
So EDR is the automatic guard, and the SOC is the detective watching the monitors.
That's a great way to put it. And the sources give us real-world examples. For businesses in the Microsoft ecosystem, for instance, you start with Microsoft Defender. It's a really robust foundation.
But you have to configure it right.
You have to manage it, exactly. And then for that advanced layer, you might add a specialized tool like CrowdStrike Falcon.
And what does that add?
CrowdStrike is known for catching those really sophisticated zero-day exploits, the hands-on keyboard attacks that a foundational system might miss. Plus, its agent is super lightweight, which is good for performance.
So it's the integration of all three, Defender, CrowdStrike, and the 24/7 SOC team watching everything.
That's the stack.
Okay, let's shift from tools to policy. A common weakness is always access, right?
It's identity and access management, or IAM. And honestly, this is where the basics can save you.
You're talking about multi-factor authentication. MFA.
MFA on everything. Mm-hmm. Email, VPN, financial apps, everything. It is the single most effective barrier against stolen passwords being used. It's a non-negotiable.
And beyond MFA, there's the principle of least privilege access. It sounds simple, but I imagine it's violated all the time.
Constantly. So maybe people have full admin rights when they just need to use one or two applications.
Right.
Least privilege just means you only get the absolute minimum access you need to do your job. It's a huge risk reduction because if an attacker compromises a standard account, they can't do much damage. Their movement is immediately limited.
And connecting that to the network itself, how does the actual architecture help contain a breach?
Architecture is just as important. We're talking about segmentation and micro-segmentation.
So creating digital fire breaks.
Exactly. You're creating small, isolated zones in your network. So if an attacker gets into, say, the marketing department, segmentation stops them from just jumping over to the finance servers.
You're containing the blast radius.
Precisely. You're separating critical systems from general user workstations. It buys you precious time for the EDR or the SOC to step in and shut the attack down.
Right. Claim it buys you time. But breaches can still happen. So let's talk about resilience. Let's talk about backups.
Yeah, the last line of defense.
With attackers now actively hunting for backups, what's the gold standard?
The framework is still the 3-2-1 rule. You need 3 copies of your data on 2 different types of media with 1 copy offsite or offline. That redundancy is key.
But attackers know this. They go after the backup. So how do you protect them?
This is where immutable backups become a requirement, not a luxury.
What does immutable mean here?
It means that once a backup file is written, it cannot be changed, encrypted, or deleted for a set period of time.
Even by an administrator.
Even if the attacker gets full admin access to the backup server itself, it guarantees you have a clean, untouchable restore point.
And the ultimate protection. The lifeboat if everything else fails.
That would be air gap storage.
So physically disconnected from the network?
Physically or logically, yeah. It's unreachable by any malware. If your whole network is toast, the air gapped copy is your guaranteed way back. It's your absolute last resort insurance policy.
And how often should businesses be backing up?
That depends on your recovery time objectives, your RTOs.
Which is how long you can afford to be down.
Exactly. If your main system can only be down for an hour, you need near real-time backups. If another server can be down for a day, a nightly backup is probably fine. You define the RTOs first.
And the sources really hammer this point home. You have to test them.
You have to test your backups, period. So many companies find out their backups are corrupted only when they desperately need them. The rule is you test critical systems at least quarterly and everything else annually.
Okay, let's shift from tech to people. Human error is still the leading cause of breaches. What does training look like now?
It needs to be consistent and focus on behavior. Phishing recognition, of course, but also social engineering tactics, safe computing habits, you know, not using public Wi-Fi without a VPN.
And creating a culture where it's okay to report a mistake, right? Where people aren't afraid to say, I think I clicked on something bad.
That's everything. You need to encourage people to report immediately, without fear, because that quick notification can be the difference between a minor incident and a total disaster.
And it's not just internal policy. There are external pressures too, like legal compliance and cyber insurance.
That's a huge point. A ransomware attack isn't just a tech problem. It's a legal one.
IPA for healthcare.
Right, or financial regulations. If customer data is involved, laws like CCPA kick in with huge fines if that double extortion data gets published.
And that ties right into cyber insurance. Insurers are getting a lot tougher, aren't they?
Oh, they're demanding specific controls now. They're losing too much money.
So you can't even get a policy without certain things in place.
Exactly. They often require mandatory MFA, EDR on all your endpoints and proof that you have tested immutable backups. If you don't have those, you might not even qualify for coverage.
So let's talk about the worst case scenario. You need an incident response plan before you get hit. What are the critical parts of that plan?
First, you have to define the team and the roles ahead of time. Who's the technical lead? Who calls the lawyers? Who handles PR? You can't be figuring that out during a crisis.
And what's the immediate goal?
Containment and eradication. You have to immediately isolate the affected systems to stop the spread, cut off the attacker's access, and make sure they're completely gone before you even think about recovering.
Okay, so let's get really practical. Based on the source material, what does a listener do right now if they suspect they have ransomware, they see a weird file, their computer is slow? What's the immediate action?
First thing, disconnect from the network. Pull the network cable or turn off the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But, and this is a key detail, do not power the machine down.
Why not? My instinct would be to just shut it off.
Because leaving it running preserves the forensic evidence in the machine's memory. Experts need that to trace what the attacker did. So disconnect, don't power down, and alert your experts immediately.
And the big question, should you pay the ransom? Especially with that double extortion threat hanging over you.
Law enforcement and cybersecurity experts all say the same thing. Strongly do not pay.
Because there's no guarantee you'll get your data back.
No guarantee you're funding criminal syndicates and you're marking yourself as a target for future attacks. Payment is an absolute last resort, a decision you only make after you've exhausted every other option and you've talked it through with your legal and security teams.
It all comes back to proactive investment being a much better choice.
It's just simple math. You know, a comprehensive proactive security stack, EDR, SOC, backups, it might run you somewhere between, say, $50 or $150 per user per month.
Which sounds like a lot until you compare it to the alternative.
Exactly. It is a fraction of that $250,000 average recovery cost, not to mention the damage from having your private data dumped online.
Yeah.
This is just a cost of doing business now.
So the big takeaway for you, the listener, is that the game has changed. It's double extortion. Data is stolen first. And to defend against that, you need layers, EDR, SOC monitoring, strict access controls with MFA, and critically immutable backups that you actually test.
Defense is a continuous process now. It's not a product you buy.
Right. And since we know attackers often spend days or even weeks hidden inside a network waiting for that perfect moment, that leaves us with a final question for you to think about.
Mm.
If you were to audit your systems right now, not for viruses, but for the subtle signs of reconnaissance, things like unusual scripts or weird login patterns, what evidence of an initial breach might be hiding in the shadows of your network just waiting for this weekend to strike?